U.S. Chess Executive Board open session number two for Sunday, January 19th, 2020, Raleigh, North Carolina. Mr. President?
Okay, we've been in closed session for a little while. There's no motions that have come out of that closed session. And we have just returned from lunch, and we have a visitor with us who wants to discuss a proposal. So, Carol?
Yeah, so...
I will let you introduce this.
Sure. This is Walter High, for those of you who do not know him. He, I think, is a pretty regular participant in the U.S. Open and has been, for the last, how many years, running the U.S. Masters for U.S.?
This will be the, let's see, 12th, 9th?
9th year. So, U.S. Masters appears to be a great tournament. And it's held just up the road about an hour and 15 minutes in Greensboro. And Walter, I sent something around early this morning, but Walter is here to propose a companion event, as I understand it, to this U.S. Masters. So I'm going to turn it over to you, Walter. Welcome.
Thank you.
I'm glad you could join us.
I appreciate you taking the time to meet with me unexpectedly like this. I was approached by several coaches sort of representing the college collegiate committee, chess committee, about adding an individual championship for collegians to the U.S. Masters, because it's my understanding that the Pan Ams, which is a team championship, is the only real championship for collegians. They have no individual championship, and they were very interested in having one. And many of them had participated over the last 5, 6, 7, 8 years in the U.S. Masters in Greensboro, and thought it would be a good setting to try to put an individual championship within this group. I actually have a handwritten document here from the coaches. I met with them at the Pan Ams several weeks ago. They held a meeting there. And they voted in favor at that point of allowing me to hold an individual championship, which they said could be called an American championship. It said to be called a national championship had to be approved by this body itself. So I was agreeable to that, and Carol suggested that because you were meeting here, and I live only about 17 miles away, that I come here and see if we could get it.
It was convenient, wasn't it?
It was convenient that we could get it possibly approved as a national championship, but they have already approved it as an American championship from their body. Who would I give this little handwritten? I'll read it, and then it says...
I'll take it when you're...
December 27th, you want to read it? Or
no, you go ahead.
December 27th, 2019, Charlotte, North Carolina. We coaches at top U.S. collegiate chess programs support efforts of Mr. Walter High to organize the U.S. Collegiate National Championship individual in conjunction with the U.S. Masters, Greensboro, August 21, 25, 2020. The Collegiate Championship is meant as an additional classification to the currently existing tournament. In other words, it will function with inside the U.S. Masters, not as a separate event. There will be one large pairing group, and the top collegian at the end of the U.S. Masters will become the national champion. It's then signed by all or most of the coaches who were in the room at the time.
Are they going to be paired as just in the event generally?
Yes.
And then
yes.
Yeah.
Yes. We are not altering the structure of the Masters at all. I don't know if you had a chance to look at the...
The first question I have is, how can somebody be... I mean, legitimately stake a claim as being the top college player when I didn't play anybody in college in the tournament?
Most of the players are college players, actually. We get a tremendous collegiate tournament.
And what determines eligibility for the players? In other words, is the college I just graduated from? If I'm a high schooler and I'm going to Harvard next semester, is that my college I'm playing? Am I playing as a qualified as a college player?
I assume they have to be a student in good standing at that time at the college.
But most colleges haven't started yet, so how can you be in good standing?
Well, what is this about?
Well, you're in your sophomore year, you're in your junior year, you were in good standing the year before.
Right, I mean, good standing carries through.
But what's the routine that you're going back to that college again?
Sure.
So I'm just concerned about, we always get these eligibility questions that come up in college, and this one has some additional complications to it, you know?
Well, the College Chess Committee for playing in the Pan Ams has some...
Very specific.
Very specific, which are different for different levels of players. The levels of the higher level players actually have more stringent eligibility requirements than the lower players. Mainly the GMIM and not WGM, because the WGM titles come with lower ratings. So it's really looking at rating bands is what it is. That the higher rating bands, you can't have somebody who's taking one class online and qualifies to play for your school. And that's the rules they've set up. So they have some, and I know they have a subcommittee that I think Al Lawrence chairs that's looking at those eligibility questions when they're presented to make some determination if those
I think there's some very specific situations. You know, the high school senior who graduates, like Jennifer Yu. Jennifer's going to Harvard next year. She's got a scholarship full ride to go to Harvard, but she's not enrolled in school.
Right.
So can she compete as a college player, even though she's clearly going to Harvard? Or I just graduated from Texas Tech, and now I'm going to go to graduate school at Webster. So which school am I playing for? Which one do I have to play for?
I don't even think you're playing. You're not playing for a school. This is an individual deal.
No, I know, but you're college. So you have to be.
Are you in college?
In college?
Right. Are you in college at that point? Okay.
So, well, from the Denker perspective, the rule there is if the year you just finished, since that's held in summer as well. So there are any 9th through 12th graders from the previous school year are eligible to play in the Denker. So
well, the interesting here, you have some schools that are already in session in some colleges.
True.
By late August.
You have your summer session.
Right.
So it is tricky.
So I think to
because you could have just graduated from high school and already be enrolled in college.
So I think to address Mike's concern is a stake needs to be put in the ground.
If there needs to be some eligibility criteria.
Semester, or you're enrolled to start. If you weren't enrolled in college the prior year, I think there's some parameters that we can set a stake in the ground.
I was enrolled in college when I was 15. You know, so I didn't. Well, I was enrolled in high school at the same time. I was in both.
You were 6'5 and 220 pounds at the time.
I mean, I agree. There is no individual college champion that's appointed right now. That's wins a tournament.
There was a tournament about that ended maybe 10 years ago.
It used to be Barcade Wells. Used to do the high school national.
For a couple of years, it was. That's right. I'd forgotten about that, but it was actually a summer invitation along with the Denker at the U.S. Open. That was also for several years. It was there too, and that was in the summer.
Most of these coaches are with the scholarship schools.
Yeah.
Of course, they're the ones who have the GMs and IMs more than some of the other schools do.
Yeah, they're the ones.
If you have. How large is the master section? Usually about 50, 60 players, or is it more like 100?
About 90.
About 90, and of that, what percentage of those players are roughly enrolled in college?
That's a good question. I had looked up that statistic.
Even if you assume for discussion that it was a third or a quarter,
right.
The odds are good. You can play somebody in one of your, around six you play, but you don't have to play nine.
This is the norms tournament.
You're going to play somebody. So, but it's just the issue of just so happens that that guy didn't play anybody in college the entire tournament. He just the luck of the draw, you know, because you can't rig the draw if it's a norm tournament. I mean, you have to go by feet and pairings,
exactly.
Whatever they are. So you can't rig it so that you got two college players playing every round or something because it's feet eight, it's a norm tournament. And as long as the rules allow for that, it's just the top finishing collegiate player.
Well, according to the proposal in front of us, they're eligible for the prize money from the U.S. Masters, and then there's a supplemental award. Mm-hmm. Players who do not qualify by title or rating for the Masters, there's another event being run concurrently, and they would be shunted into that one, but I would presume they're, they're not, I don't know what we're calling them. It's certainly not a collegiate championship for players rated below 2,200. It's just, if you want to come, you can bring somebody and put them into that section. Right? I mean, am I misunderstanding that?
Is there a rating limit for the Masters? I believe
yes, you have, you have to have a Masters title, or if you are a junior and have been rated over 2,000 U.S. chess rating, you are eligible to play in the Masters.
Okay. And there, and that could include some of these college players.
Yeah.
Very well could be, fitting into that junior qualification.
So when you say have a master title, does that mean you have currently a rating over 2,200, or that you have had a rating?
You have a title. Master's titles, my understanding, either FIDE or U.S. Chess, but those are permanent titles. Once you attain them, it doesn't matter what you're rating.
I'm a 2,100 master.
Some of us disagree on whether you maintain it forever, but
it's listed on the website.
What are you disagreeing about? That's part of the rating regulations.
What?
That's part of the rating regulations. That's not a...
The master title is just you get to 2,200.
A post event rating of 2,200 gives you the NM title for life.
Right.
Most people don't refer to it that way, but that's the way it is.
Okay.
Yeah.
That's good to know. Master.
I'm a master working on expert, thank you.
You and Chuck both.
There's three of us in here.
I don't know what they mean when they say master,
because
I have one in Taekwondo.
Oh, there you go. Double master. You're right. It says U.S. chess.
You
master.
Can fight your way in.
Chuck, you just have to read it. It says U.S. chess.
Oh, he's a grandpa.
So if this is going to be the U.S. Individual Collegiate Championship, but if USGM's got to pay and USIM's got to pay and non-USIMs don't have to pay. And I know why you do that. I get it for the norm piece.
Yeah.
How's that going to work? How's that fly?
That's always the way it's been, though, right? That's nothing new.
That's because it's the math. That's okay. That's the Masters tournament. If it is our U.S. chess individual collegiate championship, we're going to say non-U.S. players don't have to pay, but U.S. players do. That ain't going to work. That does not work. Can't work. I'm not going out to our college community and say, if you got recruited to come play from a foreign area, now you got this title, you can do. But if you're a homegrown title, you got to pay to play in the U.S. individual collegiate championship.
You could, in theory, limit the holder of the titles to someone who has a USA flag with FIDE.
That's true.
There you go. That's a good point.
Tell me what that means.
It means if you're a USA flag player, they're not going to be exempt from the entry fee.
In other words, so for the college fee, for the college title, or for the
For the college title, specifically.
So it's the top finishing U.S. flagged feet player.
Top finishing player with top finishing collegian whose flag is a USA player.
I don't disagree with you, but I don't think that's what the coaches
would
sign.
I don't care what they sign. It isn't their tournament. It's our tournament. And I'm not going to go for a tournament that says you can compete for our prize, but if you're U.S., you got to pay. And if you're non-U.S., you don't. That dog don't hunt.
And I'm not, on a personal level, I don't think I have the level of opposition that Alan does. Of course, I'm not on the board, so it doesn't matter. But the cleanest way to deal with that, without having to charge additional fees, is to restrict that title to only U.S. players.
Yeah, I get it.
Which is what we do with certain invitational events now anyway. You know, you can only even play in some of our national championship events if you're a U.S. player.
Mm-hmm.
So there would be a similar restriction.
For the U.S. Open, that gets the rights to go to the
top
finishing U.S. player.
Yeah.
Right, same thing. And that's what a lot of states do. You have a state open.
So you can play in a state. A lot of states classes, you can play if you're out of state.
Right.
You just can't win the state title.
Right.
Right. Now,
now, if you want foreign players to be eligible, then they're going to have to pay.
That could be the other.
That's probably the other way to do it. I mean, the political side of having somebody walk off with a national title when they're not even flagged as a U.S. player is difficult. So.
And then not only that, the ability for the, I mean, those players will draw parallel to the U.S. Open. So the U.S. Open doesn't allow a winner to go represent the U.S. unless it's a U.S. player.
And although this event would not have any qualification associated with it, there is a World Students Championship from which a winner of this event could potentially end up with some sort of support to attend the World Students. Eventually, I'm saying. Not anytime soon. But.
Or could be, if there's official representatives to it, could be the official representative whether we pay for help them go or not.
Correct.
So beyond the support for the event from a perspective of allowing it to be titled as a U.S. national championship thing, what else are you looking for from this board?
This proposal came to me from the college committee.
Okay.
And I was willing to put it forth to the board because they proposed it wouldn't require any changes in my structure of my event. So I just brought it to you. I have nothing to gain from this personally, other than the fact that it might increase attendance at my event.
I get it.
More collegiate players will come. It's already one of the top events.
But the proposal doesn't look at U.S. chess choking in $1,000 to go to that winner or nothing, right?
No.
Yeah, okay.
No, we're not asking for any financials.
Yeah, let me say one thing. I walked over there to look at the names. I don't think that many, if any of them, are actually on the committee right now. Okay. So do you want this to go to the college committee for vetting?
That's what
or input? And I'm asking you that, Walter. Do you want this to go to the actual college committee?
Hold on, because I have an email from Kelly Bloomfield.
Okay.
Who is chair of the college
committee? Yeah, he is college committee.
He's not on that list, so that's why.
Yeah, because he wasn't one of the coaches. They had the coaches sign. They asked the coaches to sign it.
Right. Well, he didn't sign it, I don't believe. There's one name.
He's not a coach. Is he a coach? I guess he is.
Sure he is.
Yeah, he's a coach at Ohio.
He's a faculty sponsor, effectively.
Let me read you his email from December 27th, which was during the AM.
Yeah, right. Okay.
He says, "Hi, Walter. Sorry again for the delayed response."
Hey, guys.
"Sorry again for the delayed response, but with the Pan Ams upon us, I've been quite busy. The committee has discussed your proposal, and we would be willing to go forward as long as it is not advertised as a national championship. That requires the executive board to approve, and a full bid would have to be submitted. We were thinking to call it the American Individual Collegiate Championships, and then we could work to formalize it as a national championship for the following year. Please let me know if this is acceptable."
Would you be willing to forward me that email?
Sure.
I wonder what that committee means. We have some experience with the college committee that we don't know if that's the full committee or portion of it.
What I would recommend is you appoint a couple of us to draft up what the event would look like based on what we've talked about with Mr. Hyde, and then we send that to the college committee and let them work it through, and then it comes back to us as an executive board is for us to make a decision based on what they say, because we're making some significant changes to the eligibility and the who would win and those sorts of things, and this would specify those parameters for the college committee, and then we tell the committee who want the full committee to vote on it,
right?
And then it comes back to us, and then we give them we can draft this up this afternoon or this evening, and we come back till we got to the end of January to work it, or something. But
Yeah, we can get relative. I think we can get input from it relatively quickly.
Right. Yeah,
and in principle, am I opposed to the idea? No,
no,
I'm not.
Right.
The way it's structured, I got some problems which I've enumerated.
I'd like to point out, if and when creating a national championship event, at some point, at least the outline of this event has to go into the bidding guidelines.
If
the event is not going to be directly organized by U.S. Chess,
yep.
then the outlines of the event have to go into the bidding guidelines.
Yep.
This event probably would get a very bare-bones treatment in the guidelines because the way it's being organized now is not replicable unless it were housed as part of another event. And that's okay.
Right.
Just understand that creating the event, you are probably going to at some point have somebody interested in bidding on it, which is okay. Just know that it has to go into the bidding guidelines
right.
as a separate event.
Which is why folks may not want it to be a national championship.
Because there is a possibility at some point this gets decoupled from the U.S. Masters, potentially.
Yeah, very well could be.
I mean, if Webster puts in a bid on it,
or whatever, you know?
Yeah, if somebody starts offering prize money.
Yeah.
But that being said, I don't anticipate that necessarily happening soon. Mm-hmm. Just putting out there that opens that door, which is probably not what the framers of this intended.
Yeah,
I mean, because a board could always decide to pull it back, make it part of the K-12. I'm not saying we ever would, but you could always, you know, somebody might get a wild air and decide to do something like that. It's not going to attract the same group of people.
That's correct.
But
or the same group of staff.
But I'm just saying it could, because we did that for a little while.
Yeah.
We've done it before.
It also opens the door, for example, U.S. Chess may at some point decide to organize it directly.
Yeah.
Not saying I have no interest in that, but it's possible. So... all that aside, from an event standpoint, I this doesn't sound like any extra work for me, so.
There is another concern in that we have a plethora of national championships, and this is just another one or two or three that starts coming into play, and whether we want, you know, I mean, how many did we end up figure we had, 40-something?
I think the counter to that is when we talk about retention and game.
Yeah, no, I got all kinds of good reasons to do it.
See significant drop off after high school.
Yeah.
Having something else to play for makes an awful lot of sense, especially when it's now potentially being offered at the time when someone may not be in school or at the very beginning of school.
And that's a very, very popular event, too.
And we should also point out, because of the rating restriction to enter the field, you are guaranteed to get quality competitors. You know, vying for this. You're not going to have a 1,700 player winning this national collegiate championship.
But for the interest of U.S. Chess, to be very parochial about it, we're interested in boosting U.S. flag players. Right? I mean, from the U.S. Chess perspective, it's far better for us to be promoting the folks who may have the opportunity to compete for us internationally rather than somebody who may have the opportunity to compete internationally for Poland or Germany or Azerbaijan or wherever, doesn't even matter, where many of the scholarship schools are recruiting non-U.S. flagged. Now, on the other hand, some of those people turn into U.S. flagged people after they get here.
Many of them are in the process of doing so now.
Yeah, there's that aspect to it. So, I mean, I don't want that to sound like it's a total negative about non-U.S. players because we have that pipeline that's also starting to go on, too.
So, wait, what would happen, let's assume for discussion that there's two collegians finished with 7.5 points. How do you determine which of the two is the top collegian?
I presume you use whatever tie breaks the event is using, unless you wanted to specify a different set of tie breaks exactly related to this tie break. Or if you wanted to have a speed playoff.
Everyone
or something.
Loves a speed playoff.
Well, I'm not going to presume to tell Dr. High.
Well, for the Masters itself, we have a speed playoff for the Masters champion, also for the Masters American champion.
Yeah.
I don't care. I don't have to organize it, so I don't care.
So how many grandmasters did you have last year?
27
grandmasters. That's a
good number. So, but I would say whatever, in general, whatever tie breaks the event uses, is probably what my instinct would be. That would be whatever this would use as well. But I would avoid specifying those in the bidding guidelines.
Yeah, I would just say whatever tie breaks are used by the event.
Well, the problem is in the guidelines, we're going to put it in as a standalone event.
Mm-hmm.
So
right, no, it can't. It can't have that.
Right,
because it's a national championship. It's got to have standalone rules behind it. Yeah. So it, but if the event is using a speed playoff, you can put speed playoff as the rule. That's what you're saying. I get it.
Yeah, I would have no. From a competitive standpoint, I see no problem with a speed playoff. As Ryan points out, people like watching those. So,
can I make one more comment about this?
Oh yeah.
This was brought to me. Of course, this is. I really don't have a dog in this fight.
Yeah.
This probably cost me about $1,500 in prize money and plaques and stuff like that just to put it on. Plus, I pay for rooms for 5 nights for GMs and 4 nights to ensure that we have a Super Swiss, and it's going to add to my hotel bill tremendously from that. But I'm willing to absorb that because of the, I think the prestige it would bring to the event.
Yeah.
But without it, I'm fine too. So I'm not going to go away crushed if you guys turn this.
I get it.
One of the reasons, this was voiced in private, one of the reasons that the coaches want this is because they're running scholarship programs and they have to go to their administrations and show that they're going to events with these players that mean something. And they have no individual championship. They've got the Pan Ams. They struggle for other events that they can justify to their administrations to keep programs in place and not have money reduced. So they would like to have an individual championship like this to help support the existence of their programs.
And that's a balancing act as to how much those programs benefit U.S. chess and how much they benefit chess in the U.S., which aren't always the same thing. So, I mean, on the whole, I think we've had the conclusion that generally they do benefit chess in the U.S. even when they don't necessarily directly benefit U.S. chess. So, but that's the balancing act, too.
So if it is called an American Collegiate Championship, does that take it off the hook with this board? It's just an American Collegiate Championship.
The question is whether the event is designated a national championship event. Whatever the name of it is
right. Well,
like I don't want to create a precedent that allows somebody else to create something called an American Championship. That you know, that's outside of what we do like that.
I actually just reject.
Because that would help set some.
I sometimes reject event names from organizers.
Yeah.
That sound too close to being national events that are not.
But I think it would help set a precedent that, you know, we've had that discussion earlier about a certain individual saying they would quote breakaway, and it would help set a precedent that supports that kind of a case.
Right.
That anyway, we can do it on our own. We don't need, you know.
I like the plan of.
Yeah, I think it's.
I mean, I like the. That's not what I was saying. I like the plan of let's get some flesh on concerns that we have.
Yeah.
Get it back to the college committee and let the full college committee give us some feedback on those issues. I think a couple of those issues are this issue of who's actually eligible.
Right.
Is it just U.S. flag players or does anybody, if it's anybody, then I got a real problem.
Yeah, I would say the board strongly prefers that the title go to a U.S. flag player. You know, with the potential that player could then go on, like Boyd said, what's that other term?
It's the World Student Championship. But more importantly, I think the better precedent to make is I cannot think of a national championship event we currently hold where the title can be conferred. With the exception of the U.S. Open, but then none of the privileges appertaining to the title itself transfer to a non-U.S. player.
Right.
Any sort of all other events, you have to be either studying in the U.S. or living in the U.S. or both to win the tournament.
But again, I think there's a big hurdle to overcome here. In the fact that, and I get exactly why you do it, Mr. Hyatt, it makes absolutely perfect sense for the way you're running the event you're running. But I got an issue for a USCF championship that where you've got different criteria for a US flag player than a non-US flag player, different conditions, different terms, you know, And I'm talking about the IMs, the U.S. IMs versus the non-U.S. IMs, and I get it. Like I said, you know, you need them for the norm, but depending on how this event is structured, and I agree with you, I think the coaches are thinking that it's going to include everybody they got on their team. But
I'm sure they are.
I'm sure that they are, but I'm going to tell a U.S. player, just because you're a U.S. player, you got to pay to go, and the foreign player doesn't have to. I don't think that works for a U.S. national championship event. I just don't. Whether you know, if they don't compete in that division, that's one thing. But then they're not. That doesn't meet what these coaches want. These coaches want to justify their existence by having, you know, their players who they've imported and paid a lot of money to be able to win a national championship. That's what they want to do, and I get it.
So the alternative then is to have foreign players who wish to be eligible for this title pay the same entry fee as a U.S. title player.
It's not just entry fee, it's also hotel charges.
Well,
no, it is. I mean,
the organizer can provide whatever conditions they want to attract players. The only thing that is common is the entry fee.
I don't totally agree with that. I think if it's going to be our event with everybody qualified for it, I don't see how the terms and conditions can be different for a U.S. flag player overnight in a way that favors a non-U.S. flag player. And it makes perfectly good sense for the Masters why you do that, because you're trying to grab people for norms. But this is not a norm thing that we're talking about. I know it would be encased inside one, but we don't have to have a norm event for it to be the U.S. individual collegiate champion.
Boy, can I ask you, what's the status of the Pan Am event? Is that a national championship? Or
yes, it is.
But you can have a team with all foreign players on
yes.
there. Because it's a national championship among... But they allow foreign country, and not just foreign players, but teams from Mexico.
That's because it's a Pan Am event. It's Canadian.
But he referred to it as a national.
It is considered a U.S. chess national championship event.
Right.
But it involves foreign countries.
Yes.
And a foreign country could win.
Conceivably, yes.
And this is part of the reason why I have an issue with, from an events perspective, with saying that as an organizer of an event, if I want to incentivize someone to appear at my event by paying their hotel, then I don't think that's the same as just saying there's no cost. You still have to pay the entry fee, which is significant for that particular tournament. It's not like a $50 or $60 entry fee to a national scholastic.
I understand your point. I disagree with it, but I understand it.
Okay.
And, you know, the Pan Am Intercollegiate is sort of an accident of history to a degree. If we were working with a clean slate today, would we do it that way? I'm not sure we would. So, not as a national championship event. So, I'm not saying these can't be worked out. I'm just saying those are issues that I think we kick back to the collegiate committee and let them come back with a plan, and then we have to decide if it works for us or not. And I think there's a way it can be worked out. You know, I may be the lone person hollering about the difference in conditions for U.S. and non-U.S. players. I doubt I am, but... So, well, cool. Why don't we do that? Who's volunteering to jump on it? Mike and Mike? You're already working with the college committee. I mean, is that, and you're the liaison to it. So,
we've got this in Word, or is it a PDF?
I sent it around in Word.
Okay. What is your deadline as far as starting to make promotions and needing an answer by? Would you say?
How much time do you guys need?
No, we're asking how much time you need.
I'd like to get this settled by the end of March.
That's cool. I was thinking beginning of March, but yeah, that's fine. Okay.
Well, we got to work around. It's got to be before then, because starting, you know, the third week of February, we are real tied up. So this has to happen by mid-February at the latest. Because you got four or five of us that will, with the FIDE Special General Assembly, we're going to be out of the country and tied up and be focused on something else.
Yeah.
So this has to happen before all that goes down.
Okay.
So I think we're looking at mid-February, 15 February or so. So we need an answer back from the college committee by the end of the month. And then we have, gives us a couple of weeks, of which one of those weeks I'm going to be in Switzerland for a FIDE thing. So, you know, there's some out of, there's just some time crunches. It sounds like it's a long time, but it isn't. So.
And my sense is, I take from this meeting that you do not want us to go ahead and call it an American championship and just not get any approval from this board. That's, I was a little nervous about that when they proposed that, because I didn't know how that fit within the strictures of this body.
I don't think that would make us very happy. I don't know that we would approve.
That was their suggestion.
I don't think we would approve that event name for listing.
It would never. It wouldn't make it into a TLA. Joan would refer to me, and I reject it.
Cool. Well, sir, thank you so much for taking your time to come over here on a lovely Sunday. We're so glad to see you.
Well, I'm glad you saw me a little early, because it's 2:45, and I may be able to make it home just after the kickoff of the Kansas City-Tennessee game now, since you heard this early.
Well,
may I ask Walter a quick question? So, Walter, today I presented to the board about the meeting we had with USA Fencing, and you probably talked with Bob Boder from USA Fencing more extensively than anybody at the Charlotte Open. Mm-hmm. Just, did you come away with any particular feelings one way or the other about partnership possibilities with them? And,
well, I know he was enthusiastic about some of the things we were doing. I wasn't quite sure how the two bodies would work together to promote their events through some sort of joint thing. He referred to fencing as fighting chess, mm-hmm. you know. You know, I worked for many, many years with USA Track and Field. I was on their governing body too. For over 20 some years I worked with them. And they're what's considered an Olympic sport like fencing is. And it's very difficult for them to work individually. All those sports try to work together, form as many alliances as they can, just because of strength in numbers. But fencing and chess are pretty far apart from my point of view. I'm not quite sure what we could do to work with them, other than the fact that the mutual support, you know, when you go before a group, sometimes you go representing multiple bodies rather than one when you have to go to higher level authorities. That makes sense, but I don't think too many of our chess players are going to take up fencing.
Well, we certainly aren't recognized by the IOC. However, the FIDE has aspirations to be recognized by the IOC. And in a number of countries, the Chess Federation receives funding from the National Olympic Committee. Of course, in a number of countries, the National Olympic Committee receives funding from the government, unlike how it works in the United States. So there's a...
But our participation in the Olympia doesn't have anything to do with the IOC.
Does not. Correct. They're not related at all.
Right.
Yeah. But as Dan pointed out, there are some very strong chess playing juniors who are also fencers.
Yeah.
So there's some overlap. So, that's interesting.
Okay, thanks. Just was curious about your perspective.
Help you a little Thank more you. Than that. As long as we don't lose them to fencing and have them stop playing chess.
Now that would be an interesting tie break, give them both swords, you know? I mean, that would be kind of... Well, they're blunted.
So about the insurance.
Thank you all, ladies and gentlemen, for spending the time to address us.
Thanks.
We'll see what comes of it.
Appreciate
it. Like I said, I don't really have a dog in the fight, but it would be mutually beneficial to us, I think, if we could work something out. Thank you.
Thank you.
I think what we still have some matters that we were looking to deal with in our closed session. I don't think we're done with that yet, because we still had some staff closed session report pieces that we need to address. So at this point, we'll go back into closed session and maybe there for the better part of the rest of the day. We'll see.